In today's episode, we're going to talk about natural ways to support bone density. I'm Dr. Valerie from Progress Your Health.
And I'm Dr. Mackey from Progress Your Health. So the last one we talked about, the DEXA score, or DEXA scan, what does it mean? For some reason, we're on a little bit of a bone density kick here lately.
I know, I'm kind of rolling on that. I just wrote about it in our newsletter too, which a shout out to all the people that signed up for our newsletter. Thank you.
Yeah, we just published our second episode, our second issue. Went out actually on your birthday. And, so far there's been people that's been finding it. Hopefully people enjoy it. Your writing is very interesting.
So we're on a bone health kick right now.
Yeah. No, I mean interesting in a good way. I think you write, I couldn't write the way you write. I don't know how you do it, but I know you enjoy it. And hopefully people enjoy reading it. So
I hope so too.
Again, as I said in the last one, we deal with a lot of menopausal women. So, of course, bone density is always a concern for pretty much everyone, at least in some way, shape, or form. So this is something we're dealing with on a regular basis. Trying to, conventionally, the goal is to stop the progression of bone loss, right? But you and I have seen in our practice, we've seen actually bone density improve. Doesn't always improve. You certainly would like to see those T-score get better, but as long as it doesn't continue to decline, this one we're going to talk about sort of the, our forte, sort of the natural things. Why don't you start off with what would you say if someone gave you, asked you for a list of natural ways to support bone density, where would you start?
Do you want me to go through the whole list or just start with one and work our way through?
Let's just go, I think we came up with six or seven things.
Oh yeah, exactly. Cause when people think of bone density, and this is, goes back many, many years, they think calcium, right? Calcium, right?
Yeah. Well, of course, calcium, our bones are made of calcium. I mean, they're made a lot of different minerals. Calcium is being the most predominant. Is that correct?
Calcium and phosphorus, but would you believe, which we're going to talk about, collagen makes up a whole bunch of the bone matrix. But the thing with calcium, I think, is there's such a debate that's been going on for years about whether you should take supplemental calcium. Is it good for your bones or is it going to give you heart disease?
Well, I think that heart disease part, which I think we touched on, I think is sort of a newer idea or newer concept. So the 1,200 milligrams of magnesium, calcium that we're told to take every day for women to maintain bone health, I don't think really is the current recommendation.
No, I think
anymore.
A lot of doctors still say that, but that's really sort of yesterday's news. I mean, I do think taking supplemental calcium, there's certain types of calcium you want to take, so we want to talk about that. Some are better than others. And also, I think we should talk about where you can eat it, right?
Sure.
I think a lot of times I do love supplements, but I think if you can get it through your food, that's the best place to get it.
Yeah. And that's why I think the 1200 milligram idea, supplementing with that, getting it from your food source. I think vitamin D, which is also on our list, I think vitamin D is sort of overtaken, is sort of like the new version of calcium. People have sort of swapped those two out. Calcium, I think, is still important, but like I said, if we can get it through food sources and then supplement with the vitamin D, that at least in our practice, that's what we've seen sort of trending the most.
Yeah, I think the calcium that I use a lot with women is calcium citrate, but there's another calcium that's a little bit better absorbable, and I can't pronounce it. Can you pronounce it?
I think it's hydroxyapatite,
yeah.
I think it is.
I can't really pronounce it, but that's got that's better absorbable than the citrate, but the citrate is still a really good absorbable form, and it's also very easy to get. You know, the oxalates are kind of cheap, and you don't really absorb those.
Yeah, the oxides, yeah.
Yeah, but I would say, when you're talking about, we're going to talk about vitamin D and vitamin K2, but those are important, but if you don't have calcium, they can't do anything.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's why.
You got to have the substrate.
Yeah. Vitamin D, as we sort of all realize, vitamin D is more of a hormone and controls calcium metabolism. You can have all the calcium you want. May actually be may actually cause some harm. But if you don't have enough vitamin D, which prior to COVID, everyone was deficient in vitamin D. I think people are paying a little bit more attention to that now, both on the immune system side, but also on the, on the bone density side, like we're talking about.
So with calcium, how much calcium citrate or that other one that I can't pronounce, how much would you recommend to one of your patients?
Yeah, I think, keeping it relatively conservative, let's say they're doing a multivitamin, you're going to get probably on average between 200 to 500 milligrams. If it is more of a bone-specific multivitamin, like a pro bono or something, it's going to probably have closer to that 500 to 600 milligram range.
Calcium is such a big molecule. Like you're saying, okay, I want, you know, might have 500 milligrams. That's like a whole bunch of capsules or tablets. Yeah, yeah. Calcium is a big molecule. I think that's why women get a little hesitant. They're like, oh my gosh, I have to take this big horse pill. So, but I do feel like you said, maybe try, if you're going to do it supplementally, try to get about 500 milligrams of calcium. Like I said, citrate's probably the easiest one to find, and it's a good absorbency. And then try to get the rest, like another 500, if not maybe up to 600 if you can, or 700 of dietary calcium.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I know you're...
I know your favorite dietary calcium.
What's that?
Greek yogurt.
Yeah, I like Greek yogurt.
That's your dessert. You have the Greek yogurt, and then you put the balsamic vinegar on top.
Yeah. It's a high protein dessert. Now you get that really nice vinegar at the store down the street that has the really nice vinegar. There's this place where we live, and they have artesian olive oils and vinegars, and just put a little sprinkle of balsamic vinegar on top of your Greek yogurt, let me tell you, it's really nice. You don't feel guilty for it either because it's got a lot of protein in it. So,
and another one that you like, I see you eat a lot, is cottage cheese.
I don't eat as much cottage. I think I eat more yogurt than cottage cheese. Yeah. But
I see when we have it in the fridge, it's gone pretty fast.
It does not last long. Yeah, and that's partially why I don't get it that often, because it just goes. I can eat a whole container at one sitting, so I just don't get
calcium it that much. And your protein. Yeah. I mean, those are dairy. I know not everybody likes dairy, or they don't want to have dairy. Yeah. But those are still two good sources. Some other sources are green leafy vegetables, but there's a little caveat with green leafy vegetables with calcium, because the oxalic acid that's in green leafy vegetables, especially like chard, that has a lot of calcium, but the oxalate actually holds on to it, that you don't really absorb a lot of calcium when you have that. Mm-hmm. I know mustard greens, kale is a good absorbency for calcium. Collard greens are really high in calcium. But if you wanted to, which I'll tell patients to do, is on those green leafy vegetables, like especially like spinach, has lots of calcium in there, but tons of oxalic acid. So you can boil or blanch, you know, blanch it pretty good, the green leafy vegetables, and that will get the oxalic acid out. So then you'll have a little bit better absorbency with that calcium.
Mm, yeah, that's of course, minerals, dark leafy greens, that's always kind of sort of a go-to. I think almonds have a really high.
Almonds do.
I think they're like, a pound for pound, I think almonds have a relatively good amount of calcium in them.
Which also has a lot of magnesium too, almonds do.
Sure, yeah.
Which is also on our list.
Yeah, so you have your macro minerals, you have your calcium, magnesium, What other one would be as a macro one?
You mean in the almonds?
I don't know, for bone density. So calcium, magnesium, of course. I mean,
you're absolutely talking about, yeah.
The phosphorus, I would consider that to be a macro mineral, just based on how much of the bone is made up of phosphorus, even though dietarily, it's going to be in a multivitamin, but you're not going to supplement with extra phosphorus. Then you have your trace minerals as well, right? So trace minerals, what would you pinpoint as trace minerals for bone health?
Boron, silica, and strontium.
Yeah, strontium. Strontium is the big one. That's the one that most people are not aware of. If you look at a really good, kind of unique bone formula, they're going to put some strontium in there, something that isn't as comprehensive is not going to have. They're going to have everything else, but they're not going to have the strontium in there.
Well, what's interesting about strontium and also magnesium and a few other that we can go, I know we're kind of bouncing around a little bit, but the in the bones, inside the bone, so you have the hard cortex, cortical bone, is a hard outer dense layer of your bone, and then inside is that soft, spongy, porous trabecular bone, and that's, the trabecular bone is more like your quality of your bone, where, you have the cells in there called osteoblasts and osteoclasts inside that trabecular bone, and the osteoblasts are building bone, and then the osteoclasts are breaking down bone. So it's kind of like a nice normal cellular turnover. You need a certain amount of breakdown and then a certain amount of buildup. And strontium in particular, I think, has some really good properties of stimulating the osteoblasts. Mm-hmm. So I know that that's kind of a hard thing when you're looking at, because it's really hard to build bone.
Yeah.
So anything that can stimulate osteoblasts to help build bone, that's a winner. So I do think the strontium has it works on the osteoblasts. Magnesium, to some extent, works on the osteoblasts, and it inhibits the osteoclasts. I know magnesium has a little bit of an effect with that, but strontium in particular does have an aim at those osteoblasts for bone building.
Yeah, I mean, that's why the conventional approach is just to sort of slow the progression, because your bone maxes out in your 20s, and after that, it's just a steady decline. Which is, as we talked about last one, which we'll touch on today, that's the reason why you need to stay active and keep those bones moving. That's why I think astronauts up in space have such a hard time, because when you're at zero gravity, there's no forces acting, there's no gravity or nothing acting on the bones themselves. They atrophy. Even, I don't know what the rate is compared to being on planet Earth, but the rate of bone degradation, that osteoclastic activity, way outpaces the osteoblastic activity, like I said, and now you have a very severe, rapid bone loss. I think that's where some of the exercise, the vibrating plates and some of those things were developed by NASA specifically for astronauts that are in space for so long.
Hmm. Yeah, no, that's interesting. So I know that strontium does act on the osteoblasts. Magnesium, I do think magnesium is sort of like very important for bones, wouldn't you?
I think magnesium is considered to be the most deficient mineral. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things that your body uses it for everything. I would consider it to be one of those major macro minerals that we need on a regular basis. And honestly, we could do it, which we probably will at some point, all the different types of magnesium and what you use magnesium for.
Yeah, what you could use it for, but I'd say for the bones, citrate for sure, mm-hmm. Glycinate for sure, and aspartate. So magnesium citrate, glycinate, and the aspartate is what's really good for the bone density.
Right.
And then I do know, too, also, like I was talking about the green leafy vegetables from the calcium. So green leafy vegetables are really high in magnesium also, like mm-hmm. the spinach, the chard I was talking about, mustard greens, collard greens, all the greens. But what's interesting with green leafy vegetables is even though the oxalic acid in there can inhibit your calcium absorption, in magnesium, it doesn't matter. You could eat the raw spinach and still be able to absorb the magnesium. The oxalic acid actually doesn't inhibit that like it does in the calcium. So that's kind of interesting. So when people say, oh, do I have to really always boil my spinach? Well, I guess to really absorb what calcium you can, but you could eat it raw and get that magnesium from it.
I did not know that.
And almonds too. So you eat your almonds, you're like, oh, I'm eating calcium and magnesium at the same time.
Sure. I know that there's some controversy about about nuts in general, but I know almonds for sure have a pretty high amount of calcium in there. Any other nutrients that you would consider to support bone density?
We had talked about boron is a good thing to support. It's more like what you would consider more of an accoutrement to bone health. It's not like, oh, take your boron. You want to have all the other things.
One of those kind of secondary trace minerals as opposed to one of those macro minerals. Mm-hmm. So boron.
Oh, and silica. Silica is another one too that is helps kind of with the bone matrix. It's another accoutrement. It's not like a big thing, but mm-hmm. silica is another good one. And the reason I think I like that one is, what is it? The horsetail, the equisetum, because we have lots of horsetail that grow here. In fact, right now in spring, they're starting to, their little tails are opening up right now. They're like little shoots.
We go for a walk, you've been pointing them all out to me.
Like they're going to open up like little horsetails. But I know equisetum or horsetail tea is also another thing that's just kind of, nice medicinal herbal medicine.
The trail that we walk down on a regular basis with the dogs, there's the one ditch. It's kind of a small little ditch, whatever, but you're right. There's that one, the one stretch, the whole thing is just nothing but horsetail. Mm-hmm. A lot of it just kind of growing wild out there. All right. So anything else on the nutrient side, minerals?
Well, I think you had talked about vitamin D and vitamin K2. I think those are the big ones we should really talk
about.
That's
the one that sort of everybody knows, but certainly vitamin D3, K2, that's, everyone's sort of aware of that over the last few years. Dosage, I think, can range a little bit. What's the most vitamin D you've ever used before?
Usually I just tell, and it kind of varies because you check the blood work. Blood work is pretty common now to check the mm-hmm. vitamin D. So you check the vitamin D, but I wouldn't say, dosage-wise, it really is individually independent.
Yeah, sure, sure.
You know, a tiny person needs a little less vitamin D.
I know that they have a prescription vitamin D that's like 50,000 IUs. There's a company that we've used before that actually has a 50,000 IU. So someone's got a really low level. You give them a daily supply plus a little bit of a weekly boost. You're not going to use a 50,000 daily. That would be way too much. Yeah. Don't take that much. but you use as a way to get someone's vitamin D, especially if they're having some autoimmune problems or some immune system issues. You want to ramp up their vitamin D fairly quickly. The one I'm thinking of in particular only has like 12 capsules in it, right? So you can't take too many of them because there's only 12 capsules. But you take, you know, one a week for 1 to 3 months. And then as a maintenance dose, so you end up doing a lot more of the vitamin D soft gels. I prefer the liquids, but we kind of go back and forth. It's really on the, on the patient preference side. What's dose? Where is a dose you see most often, or you recommend most often?
Probably 5,000 international units. That's probably like your size medium or your just common dose. I will say, vitamin D itself. The sunlight. You know, go outside, get a little sun. Yeah. You don't have to get a lot, but get a little sun. That's a good way of getting your vitamin D. And then cod liver oil has a good amount of vitamin D in there, and a lot of your kind of fatty fishes, mackerel, tuna. What are their fatty? Salmon. Salmon has, the vitamin D in there. But yeah, I know I would say probably 5,000 IUs, international units.
Yeah, I think I'd see anything from 1,000 to 5,000. You know, some people are a little more than that. I don't think there's real much of a reason to go much more than 10. Maybe if someone's got severe osteoporosis, maybe in the short term.
Well,
like you said, you're going to test it. So, that's going to adjust dosing.
Like you were saying about vitamin D. So what does vitamin D do for the bones?
Well, vitamin D, it should be called, as we all sort of know, it should be called hormone D, just because it has more of that type of an impact on the body as opposed to actually being a vitamin. And it's the only one that our body sort of makes on its own, from sunlight. Now, Mother Nature usually doesn't make mistakes like that. So we have to get sun, cholesterol, vitamin D. Cholesterol turns into vitamin D. And there's of course inactive forms. There's active forms. It gets turned into an active form in your kidneys, and so vitamin D is actually complicated. Like you really kind of boil it down, and you have all these different metabolites and things. That makes you think though. We're so afraid of the sun, right? We're so afraid. You and I used to live in Las Vegas. I mean, the sun was very oppressive there. Like you and I, especially me with my blonde hair, I could not spend a lot of time out there in the sun. And we spent had a lot of people in the Southwest in general, and everybody has low vitamin D, or at least they used to anyways. Vitamin D range is 30 to 100. Everyone would be in the high 20s to the low 30s, partially because they're just avoiding the sun. They're inside all the time. You think in a high sunshine environment, if the reference range was 30 to 100, everyone in a high sunshine environment, pretty much the Southwest, the Southeast, everything in between, that people would average 50 to 60. They'd be kind of in the middle of that reference range, but everybody is on the low side.
A lot of people spend, time inside, put on sunscreen, wear sunglasses.
Sure. Yeah, that's sort of my point. We don't get nearly the amount of sun that we're supposed to get. Where's the fine line between reducing photoaging and increasing your risk of skin cancer and being able to produce enough vitamin D?
I will say, when we lived in the Southwest, I did know a lot of people that had to have their basal cell carcinomas removed from their face and their shoulders and their ears and their noses. And so it is a thing. I don't see so much of that up here in the Northwest. Yeah. The sun, like you said, you got to find that balance there with the vitamin D.
But maybe it's more on like a short incremental exposure.
5 minutes, go 10 minutes, 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you get a little bit at a time. So, you're avoiding getting burned, we can have a whole nother discussion because you and I differ a little bit about sunscreen. You and I have different opinions about sunscreen about that.
We definitely do.
I'm trying to incite you. But one of the comments you pointed out on one of the videos that I was giving you a hard time about something.
We're married. Isn't that supposed to happen?
Did you feel like I was giving you a hard time?
I don't remember the video, but I don't think you ever give me a hard time. You're sweet as pie.
No. I think you give me a harder time than I give
Probably.
You.
I'm sure I do.
I'm just teasing. All right. So vitamin D, everyone sort of knows. I mean, that's sort of like...
What do they know?
That you should use, you should take it.
Because this is the way that I look at it. So okay. This is maybe okay. I'm steering the conversation.
You got something to say there, so go ahead and say it.
Because I feel like I was saying, we do need the calcium. Like, don't be afraid of the calcium. Like I said, there's a debate that's been going on for years that if you take calcium, it's going to go into your arterial walls, you're going to have atherosclerosis, and then all of a sudden your Widowmaker's all closed up and you're going to have a heart attack.
Or it's going to cause kidney stones.
Yeah, or you're going to get kidney stones. But I do feel like having that calcium as a base is really important. What vitamin D does is it helps the bone actually absorb calcium. So that's why
Didn't I say that earlier?
I thought I did.
But
I think you absolutely did. Yeah,
okay, you were trying to get an answer out of me. I didn't know what you were asking me for. Okay, so I get it now. Yeah, you're right. You need vitamin D to absorb the calcium.
But the K2, which is so interesting, you know, that's the new kid on the block in the last few years for bone density, is the vitamin K2 will direct the calcium to the bones. So the vitamin D can allow the calcium to be absorbed by the bones. Right. So the K2, by directing the calcium that way, will alter it from going into the arterial walls, creating atherosclerosis. So that's why those three triad, the, you know, like three musketeers, like they're so important. If you're going to take calcium, take vitamin D3, and then make sure you take vitamin K2.
Yeah. That you're right. Then you're actually getting it in the right place, nobody wants it in there. You want it in your bones, not in your coronary arteries, which we'll talk probably more about heart disease later. Because that's another one which we've already touched on before. Cholesterol is one of those things that comes up constantly. And another one of those murky areas, like you're just not really sure what you should be paying attention to. But that
K2, just as a caveat, you know, it does interact with certain all these things can interact with certain medications. So of course, if you're on like blood thinners or certain medications, you know, ask your doctor before taking them. But I do feel like the calcium, the vitamin D3, and the K2, which, did you hear that? That's the dog.
The producer down there is grumbling.
Always moaning and groaning when she's sleeping.
hopefully that wasn't too loud, but it's still funny anyways.
So we had mentioned about foods for calcium. I did miss one. Canned salmon and sardines do have a lot of calcium in there. Yeah. Now, we don't need to go into the...
You love the sardines, yeah.
I know, but we could talk about... heavy metals, eco fishing, sustainable fishing. But aside from that, it's the little bones that are in there. It's those little tiny bones that you eat.
That's where the calcium has that higher
calcium. So that I forgot to mention. And then I do have one little thing. I'm steering our conversation. K2. Do you know any foods that have vitamin K?
I would say dark leafy greens, spinach.
You know, the one that has the highest is natto.
Oh, Japanese tofu. If you've never had, her mom's from Okinawa. Yeah. Natto, it is not a Caucasian flavor or taste. It smells like dirty feet. Like it smells like a dirty, moldy, mildewy basement. Now I'm pretty open. Like I'm pretty open to eating things. Natto is not on the list.
Well, it is an acquired taste. But my mom loves to eat it. She eats it all the time. She puts it on her rice with her little veggies and has the natto on there. But it does, that has a really high level of vitamin K2 in it, which I thought was interesting. Yeah, but it is an acquired taste. And also, you know, it's great for the heart and heart disease. Yeah. So that there was a study, I didn't look it up, about women that are older that are Japanese because natto is a fermented soybeans. Yeah. That they had less risk for osteoporosis. I'm thinking it's from the natto.
Now that's where you, is it really from this one constituent, something that's found in natto, or is it because they worked in the fields and they were farming all day long?
Yeah, that, the exercise.
Because your grandmother, I mean, she was a farmer. She was, there's a fruit in Okinawa called the sequoia. Didn't she have like a, wouldn't she like go grab them all up? At least when I was there with you, she would have been in her 80s then.
Yeah, her mid 80s. Yeah, she's throwing the sacks. Yeah, she's 80 years old,
and she goes and brings them down to the market to sell them. She had a huge bag. There must have been 15, 20 pound bag at least.
Hence what people are buying now, right? They're wearing their weighted vests. Sure. So that's like the bag of sequoia.
Yeah, so she had a bag of sequoia, which a sequoia, it's like a, how would you describe it? Like a lemon-lime combination, kind of like a lime.
Because it's sweet. Mm-hmm.
I thought it was more citrusy,
like a lime. It's green on the outside, orange on the inside, and it is sweet, so you can, you know, make like almost like a juice out of it. There's probably an English name for it, but I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I don't think there is. I don't know if it goes anywhere else but there. I mean, maybe somewhere else in Southeast Asia, but I've never heard of it anywhere else but there. But anyways, yeah, I just, you know, your mom was, or your grandmother was a pre-spry lady, you know, even when she was, you know, a little bit older. So really, is it because of the natto or is it because they were, you know, working the fields all day long?
Well, I'm sure it was a nice combination, but yeah. I thought that, but I'm not sure about the green leafy vegetables with the K2. I'd have to look that up. I'm sure there is a little, I know when I, one thing that always stuck out is because I like Gouda. I'm not a big dairy person, but I do like Gouda, the cheese. There is actually K2 in Gouda.
Well, isn't it when you go on, now granted Coumadin is sort of an old school blood thinner, warfarin, they don't use it as much anymore. There's some new versions, you know, blood thinning medications. Coumadin was, it had what they call a very narrow therapeutic window, meaning that too little didn't do anything and too high and you have some problems. And I believe they'd always say, you know, limit your dark leafy green content or mm-hmm. consumption. Because oh, yeah. mm-hmm. I think that's because of the K2.
I don't know. Is it K2 or was that K1? Because there's a couple of different
types
of
vitamin K.
Vitamin K in general.
Just vitamin yeah. K, yeah, yeah. Because yeah. what you're trying to get from the vitamin K2 is the, what is it, the MK7, I can't remember the name, but it's MK7 is the acronym for the constituent that you want from the K2. So anyways,
but that actually, I think that bag of Sequasa we were talking about equivalates to that weighted vest. That would be, you know, another thing, like I said, lifestyle wise is like we talked about before, doing weights.
Sure, sure. Yeah, we mentioned it on the last one too. You can't really stress those things enough. I mean, you and I walk, now the weather's getting nice, so it's not wet and cold anymore. And the sun comes up before 8 o'clock in the morning. So, you and I walk, you know, easily in the wintertime, we're walking 25 miles a week. I think the summertime we'll probably end up doubling that. We'll probably end up walking 50 plus. But we, the two dogs down there, they need a lot of activity, and we enjoy to get out and get some sunshine. And I always got the backpack on. We're gonna have to upgrade now with the warmer weather. So we have to carry some more stuff. So you know, you're gonna be rucking with your backpack on.
That's right. That's right. Carrying water.
Yeah. On the nutrient side, can you think of any other things? I know we made a list, but I think we covered them all.
Yeah, calcium, magnesium, vitamin D3, vitamin K2, strontium, boron, silica. Oh, collagen peptides.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, I had said something about that earlier. I'm surprised we didn't circle back around it because taking collagen is really good for the osteoblasts. To help build the bone, if I remember correctly, the osteoblastic, which is another one like the strontium, anything that can bring up that osteoblast is a winner. And then technically collagen foods, I wouldn't say people eat a lot of foods that have collagen in it. What do you think?
Well, where would you say collagen? Collagen's a protein, so where would you're right. You know that you say that.
Pig skin, chicken skin. I mean, pork rinds. chicken skin.
The joints. You think of protein, but you're right. Mm-hmm. Collagen and protein are two different.
Bone broth. I mean, you can make your own bone broth buy bone broth, and so that has all the collagen in it. But in terms of foods, I think people don't generally.
You and I have been to Vietnamese restaurants mm-hmm. a lot. Pho, however you pronounce it. I say pho, but mm-hmm. I think it's called pho, which is just a Vietnamese soup. And when you look at their menu, and it can be a little bit intimidating, but one of the things they have on there, I think for exactly that reason, is the soft tendon.
Yes.
Soft tendon is where the collagen comes from. Basically what's in your ligaments and tendons. That's why they call it, they don't put collagen on the menu. They put soft tendon on there. And I think a lot of cultures, a lot of cuisines around the world actually have, some type of, some source of collagen pretty much incorporated into their food. But right in America, there's not really. Now that you say that, I really can't think of one that would be, that comes right to mind, mm-hmm. like some of the other cultures around the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so collagen is another great one. And then, I mean, you can take that supplementally too, or let's go get some Vietnamese food. I love it.
I love it. We were in college. I think I practically lived on, there's this place in Seattle called, an area of Seattle called Capitol Hill. Anyone that's in Seattle knows where Capitol Hill is. I used to work up there at a hospital. And it was I think they're still around, a little bit north of there, but it's called the Tan Brothers, and you could go, this was in the early 2000s, you can get a bowl of extra large bowl of pho, and they'd give you a cream puff as like a little dessert at the end, and then you get that for like $10. It was like the best meal ever.
That's awesome.
I ate it constantly. Big bowl of noodles and meat. It's like perfect. If you've never had it, but they give you all the bean sprouts and the
I'm
sure a lot of people
very
have
very popular.
The Asian basil and the little, the little jalapenos. And it's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Anyways, it got me off on the whole soft tendon thing, which I don't really care for the soft tendon part.
Hence, we got to take our collagen as a supplement then, or the bone broth.
What about, same thing, what about tripe? Do you think that tripe would have collagen in there? As a tripe is,
any connective tissue, on your chicken bone, your chicken wings, you eat your chicken, and then there's the little cartilage on there. That cartilage, that's all collagen.
Yeah. I think there's like type 1, type 2, mm-hmm. All the different types.
Yeah, those are the best ones, type 1 and type 2.
All right, so we're running through our list. Is there anything else that we missed or didn't talk about?
I don't think so. I think we got it.
Yeah. I can't really think of anything else that comes to mind. Mm-hmm. You still can't stress enough about the exercise, squat, deadlift, compound movements that are especially a squat, even body weight squat. I mean, body weight squat, I don't have to put a barbell on your back. There's other safer ways to do that.
I mean, there's the hormone replacement, but that's not really natural ways in terms of foods or supplements.
We were doing a little bit of research, and I did come up with a couple of other things, that we were mentioning. This is more of the natural way, but, in addition to those types of things, both the lifestyle stuff, the nutritional stuff, the supplementation, then you get into the, prescriptions. Right. Not only the conventional side, we're more so on the hormone side of things. And maybe we'll do another follow up on that.
That sounds good.
And how that actually looks or how that plays out. Mm-hmm. Mainly with, like we talked about on the last one too, estrogen plays a big role there, which is why I think women are so susceptible in the first place, because menopause, you're not making any. Your bones still need that stimulation. So. Any final recap? Are we good on this one?
I think we're good.
Okay. So, if you're interested, newsletter link should be down below. If you have any comments about anything, you liked it, you hated it, I'm giving her a hard time. That's fine too. But leave your comments down below. We do read them all. We appreciate them. We don't have time to necessarily comment on all of them. But we do appreciate it. We are paying attention, and it's really, I have to say, we're almost at 6,000 subscribers. To be honest, we've only been doing this for not quite a full year yet, about 10 months. I think we started it
in September,
July of 2024.
Oh yeah. July or August.
Yeah. And we're just shy of almost 6,000 members. So I'm actually sort of stunned by that. I'm actually really, really happy that we've got that many. So we appreciate everyone paying attention. And if there's anything you want to hear about, want us to talk about, just leave it in the comments. Till next time, I'm Dr. Mackey.
And I'm Dr. Valerie.
Take care. Bye-bye.